Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for yet another episode. Hey, did you guys tune in to the Wrestling Grenade? Me and Ray Russell on one of the segments talking about two matches from WrestleMania 5. I got to talk about Demolition versus the Powers of Pain and Mr. Fuji. Ray was just so gracious in picking me to talk about Demolition. He knows I love Demolition, so thanks for that, Ray. And then, of course, I had to also talk about Ronnie Garvin versus Dino Bravo. Not so great, Ray, but it's all good. Go check that out. Lots of other great guests on that show discussing WrestleMania 5. So go check it out wherever you get your podcast or go to WrestleCopia.com. Now, on today's episode of Wrestling Nostalgia, this is a very cool one. This is one that I've been teasing, saying that I had something brewing that was very unique and one of a kind. What that is my episode... What that is my guest on this episode is actor Dirk Benedict, who's known for his roles in Battlestar Galactica and the A-Team. So that might make you wonder, if you don't have the knowledge, Dave, why are you interviewing Dirk Benedict on a nostalgic wrestling podcast? That is because Dirk also starred in the 1986 wrestling movie Body Slam, a movie that is very dear to my heart, a movie that I absolutely love, and that I know for a fact lots of other wrestling fans love as well. So, I reached out. I made contact. I got to talk to some of Dirk's team and then Dirk himself and found out, you know, Dirk loved making this movie. But Dirk doesn't get asked about this movie a lot. Everybody wants to know about the A-Team. Everybody wants to know about Battlestar Galactica. Don't get me wrong. I love both those as well. But he doesn't get the opportunity to talk about this movie as much as he does other projects. And he said he really enjoyed working on this movie. He really loved it. So I thought, bam, everything's lined up. Perfect opportunity. It took some time in doing because Dirk's a busy guy, but we finally connected. And I have that interview coming up here in a moment. Dirk talks all about getting the part in the movie, working with Roddy Piper, what happened with the theatrical release that didn't happen, and much, much more. So let's just get right to it. Let's take a quick break. And when I come back, I'll have my interview with actor Dirk Benedict.
Filsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit FilsingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Filsinger Games, FilsingerGames.com to order now.
If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number two, and Screams.
And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. At this time, I'm being joined by the star of Battlestar Galactica, the A-Team, and of course, our centerpiece that we're talking about today, the movie Body Slam, Mr. Dirk Benedict. Sir, how are you?
I'm great. I thought you were introducing Roddy Piper and Mr. T, but no. No, you got me, the man in the middle, the go-between. What do they call that? The guy who organized that keeps everything moving.
Yeah.
I played most of the things I'm known for. I played a hustler, a con man, a lovable rogue, a guy who just wanted to have fun, make money, and it happened at a time in the business in the 70s, late 70s, into the 80s and 90s, when doing that was politically incorrect.
Yeah.
Body Slam was a male movie. It's a guy movie.
Sure.
I mean, women. It's directed. It's got it's the male perspective of the world. It's a silly movie, but it's great because it's based in the the way guys think. I mean, come on. Yeah.
Well, you brought up Mr. T, who obviously you started with.
No, I didn't bring him up. I just met him. He was full grown when I met him. He was brought up by his parents. Yeah.
On a side note, before we get into this, what was it like? Because when you were doing A-Team, right, Mr. T had that big involvement in the first WrestleMania. Did that bleed over into A-Team a little bit?
It did. Well, we had Hulk on the A-Team. He did a two-hour episode, I think.
Yeah,
and you know what the episode was called?
No, I don't
know. Body Slam.
Well, there you go, full circle.
And I never said anything because we did that before I did the film. And I didn't want to mention that somebody stole something from somebody, which, of course, we've all been ever since Adam and Eve, it's all been thievery. I mean, you know, there's nothing new under the sun, I don't think, except for, Microsoft. But it's all connected. So it did, that world fit completely into the A-Team. You know, the world of wrestling, the wrestling and boxing and the UFC. We were just ahead of, well, I don't know. UFC started right in the middle of the A-Team, I think. This sort of a response to the growing feminization of America. I showed up in Hollywood when all the movie stars started to become politically correct. They were called, what were they called? Metrosexual. That was the word for a guy who didn't smoke cigars and didn't open doors and didn't treat women like they were some, you know. So I was way too late to have a pleasant journey through the halls of of show business. But I was very, very fortunate. That's why I believe in a higher power. I got to do things in spite of all the difficulty I went through. And I had one failure, one rejection after another. But if you look, I got to do this major science fiction release that had never been done on television. Battlestar.
Yeah.
Then I got to do the A-Team. There's the last truly heterosexual TV, number one TV show in America was the A-Team. It was told from the male perspective. That's all gone. So, and then I got to do a film called Ruckus, written and directed by Max Kleban, who was right there with Hal Needham in terms of famous stuntmen who became stunt coordinators, who became directors. And I worked with Ben Johnson and Richard Farnsworth, these iconic Oscar-winning cowboy actors who worked with Duke and all of the greats and Gary Cooper. And there I am. there I am doing Ruckus with them and Linda Blair. And then I got to do Body Slam. And Body Slam to me, imagine you fell in love with your college sweetheart. I mean, you fell in love. You're crazy. Can't live it. She falls in love with you. You get engaged. You're engaged 2 years. You're 2 weeks before finally you're going to get married. You're out of college. And she calls you, I'm not going to marry you.
Yeah.
That's the Body Slam story. That's Body Slam. That's Body Slam. It's the greatest love of my acting career in film. I have theater experiences. But sure. And then somebody called me and said, it's not going to be released. It's not going to open. As far as I knew, nobody will ever see it. It did not happen.
Yeah.
And the good news is I didn't go out and shoot myself.
And it did happen. And we all did see it.
Well, it seeped through because of technology.
That's right.
I don't know.
That's right.
I haven't seen it. I've seen it once in my lifetime, and I can't bring myself to watch it.
Sure.
I don't have a copy. I don't have a. You know, I'm a Luddite. Is that too big a word for your show, Luddite?
No. Hopefully not.
reminds me of Roddy Piper. Oh my gosh.
There you go.
Oh God, we can do the whole show.
Well,
Roddy.
You mentioned Body Slam, right? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Body Slam was directed by the legendary Hal Needham, who I love. And he always said in some interviews that you were his first choice to play Harry Smilak because of your work on the A-Team.
Right.
So talk to him. How did you get approached and how was this pitch done to do this wrestling movie?
How did I fall in love? I like I said, I think it was God said, you know, you're playing the third banana on the A-Team. You've got the show egg was canceled. You know what? I'm going to do a little zap on Orion Pictures. I think it was Hal. Hal never told me. He never told me I was his first choice. He didn't. He used to kiss me every now and then, but that's a whole other story. I'm joking. Yeah. I'm joking. No, I loved Hal. Hal was the tail end of that era. It was great. We shot the movie so fast. It was like shooting from the hip. No rehearsal. Yeah. This is the A-Team. We didn't rehearse much on the A-Team, if at all, because we did bang, bang, bang. Let's do it. Okay, know your lines, hit your marks, and just do the best you can because print next, cut print next. Everybody's running and moving, and Hal didn't like that. And that was it. And it was I don't think he knew that when he hired me. What you just told me, I'd never heard. But he's smart because I was perfect for that role.
Sure.
And I did do the same similar thing on the A-Team, except when I did Body Slam, it was on steroids. I was the star. It wasn't Mr. T and George and Dwight. I had to share with those three losers, you know. And now I had the whole thing to myself. It's me and Roddy, you know, and Rowdy. Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, hey, when you get that first that script, that first. Whatever, cut the script.
How did I find out? I got a call from my agent. He said, we just, you have a meeting at Ryan Pickers with Hal Needham for this thing. Well, I had read the script. They sent me the script. They're interested
in you.
Oh, are you kidding? Well, I'll tell you. Well, you know, do you have 4 hours?
Whatever you got to eat.
So it was perfect. The script is perfect, except the dialogue was a little flat.
Okay.
It was a little flat. As Mel Brooks would probably say, it needed a little, I don't know how those guys talk. Actually, all my friends are Jewish because I never knew I was funny until I went to New York and met some Jewish people. And they go, hey, for a Gentile, you're pretty funny. So that's it. But it needed punching up. It needed to be, it was just a little, but the situations, the core of that character, this fast talking, BSing guy who would sell, and in the opening scene, his car gets repossessed, his Ferrari.
Yeah.
It's perfect. And it doesn't, he goes in and he's doing this BS thing with the guy. He's just a whirling dervish of corruption, you know. So I said, it was like Jack Lemmon and who else? I don't know, a combination of Jack Lemmon and somebody, Robin Williams. I thought, this is great. And then I was told who was directing it, and of course I was a big fan of Bert. And and Hal, the smoky stuff, because I like doing comedy. I like and I like to move fast and do it. And, but you can only do that with certain kind of actors and directors, because it bounces along on the top. It can't settle. You know, it's like playing tennis. The ball keeps going. It just keeps going. So that was it. So then when I had the meeting, I went and met Hal, and it was a chemistry. You know, sometimes you meet people and it's like talking to them. It's like you've known them a long time. That's what it was. And all I know is I went home and they said, "Hey, you're going to do this movie." I was so excited. We shot it in San Bernardino. My wife, I was married at the time, just brand new married. She was from San Bernardino. So, she wasn't around where we were shooting because, I was living in Agua Dulce. I had a little place that looked like Montana. I had wood stove, wood fireplace. I had my own well, septic system. I've always lived rustic. Right now, I'm sitting in front of my wood fire. I might fire up a cigar, but
I would expect no less.
So,
and you mentioned.
I don't know how that happened, but it was, and I knew, and when we did it, and Hal knew, we could feel people working on it that had been with Hal and all his smoky, they're going, this, and you'd hear him, we'd go, and they'd go, this is going to be huge. This is funnier than smoky. We didn't know you were that funny. I remember Hal's wife, Danny Jansen, who, you know, she played a part in the movie. She played Tanya Roberts' mother.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. So I always got in trouble because I did a movie with Tanya Tucker.
Uh-huh.
A wonderful, wonderful gal, by the way. We had a little, but she was dating Glenn, who was a great guy. He was on the set. she's dating him. And then I did this movie with Tanya Roberts, and I and if I made the mistake and called Tanya Roberts, could she would absolutely go ballistic. Absolutely, it was like I had slapped one of her children. I don't think she had kids, but I'm you know what I mean. It's very weird. Yeah. She's so sensitive. Tucker was she was a country gal. She didn't give a shit. But
sure. Well, you mentioned one of your primary co-stars, of course, was Roddy Piper. What was it like working with Roddy? Because you talked about this movie had this bounce, this flow, this ad-libbing. Piper had to have been great in that role.
He was, and I had never seen him wrestle. I'd never seen any wrestling. WWE. Okay. I hadn't. On the other hand, I'm a big fan of sports, and I played college football. And my dad was a world-class boxer, so I knew how to box, and I spent all last night catching up on UFC stuff. So I wrestling kind of missed me because I like hitting people more than grabbing them. So I met him, and I had no idea. And he was the sweetest guy. If you met him like I did, you'd go, wait a minute, this is Rowdy Roddy. He was so well spoken and so nice and so well read. When we parted, we became really close. I'm so sad he's gone because we never got to go pheasant hunting together. But that was what we all we talked about, because I loved to bird hunt, and he gave me the most beautiful Italian shotgun. When we left, he went out. When we parted, it was in San Bernardino, and he goes, "Dirk, I got something for you." I remember he lifted the trunk of his car and pulled out the most beautiful double barrel. I can't think of it. It's engraved and the whole thing. It made me cry. Yeah, it's beautiful. We got along great, you know, and we had this, and he was good, you know, but those wrestlers are actors. They know how to put on a show.
Sure.
They're performers. Yeah. What I meant to say, they're performing. You gotta give them some. Give the audience something. You can't just go out and wrestle. You gotta give it personality. And he was good at that. But off camera, he was like, you know, which is not a surprise. I mean, Mr. T wasn't always running around doing all that stuff either. I'm the only one that's the same off screen as on.
Well, there was obviously a large cast of wrestlers involved in this, right? There's a lot of the
I met them all. Yeah. Actually, when I was a kid, I knew about Gorgeous George. And who's the other guy? And the same generation in the 50, late 50s into the 60s. Gorgeous George and, Salas. Oh, they were all there. You've seen them. They were there.
Sure.
So I got to meet them. But I remember them because it was wrestling in the, it would have been in the 50s because I watched it with my dad in black and white. It was in the late 50s. Yeah. And they were there doing cameos.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, well, we should get to the wrestling part of this movie, I guess. But for me, it's I had to go out and have a couple of scotches before I could. No, I'm joking. Although I thought I should in honor of Hal. Hal likes to have his. I don't know what he drank. I think it was bourbon and water or something. I don't know. And I was at the time. I was. This is in '86. I didn't drink. But I drank with Hal because there's something sometimes when it's required, and we would have drinks, you know, at the end of the day, we would go in and have dinner. I didn't have dinner with him every night, but I would have a drink. Oh, let me tell this story. So dailies, you know what dailies are. So dailies are precious. Yeah. Dailies are golden. Nobody gets to see dailies except the head of the studio and the director and maybe, you know, the director's mistress. But nobody else. God, heaven forbid an actor should be allowed to see dailies. Dailies are gold. So I'm doing I've been in 17, 20 movies. I've starred in about 15. So I've been and I never wanted to see dailies. The last thing I wanted to see is myself on screen, you know. Except for the camera I have in my bedroom in the corner, and every now and then I rewind that. But that's a little joke. That's a little Mel Brooks. We're having dailies and we wrap. This is maybe the first day, and he's rented this whole room. We all stayed. This is the other great thing for this movie. We all stayed in one motel.
Oh, okay.
The whole crew. The whole cast, even the big star of the show, Dirk Benedict, that guy from the 80s, he's right there in room 12. And then Miss Roberts is there. And Rowdy Roddy, he doesn't have a motor. He's in the motel. We're all living the same way. It was great. We were just a crew of guys making this funny movie. So he said, Dirk, why don't you come to, we're going to look at dailies. Oh, it had to be the second day. That's what it was, because he got up now. Or third. And I said, I've never been asked to watch. I've been told to stay away. And he laughs. I go, come on. So I went and sat with him. So we walk in, and on one wall is a full bar. I mean, gin, scotch, vodka, bourbon, Canadian bourbon, the whole just every and a freezer full of all kinds of soft drinks and water and beer. It was just a full, and then there was hors d'oeuvres and snacks.
Yeah.
And that happened. And Hal says, I always do this. He said, because, you know, I think it's a mistake to keep making a secret from the crew. This is their movie.
Yeah.
Which is true. Right. I always felt that way. Why all these people busting their? We were that way on the 18, by the way. We never had time to look at anything. It was so fast. But we there was no separation. You know, we treated the people we worked with like we didn't eat at separate tables. Really. So I said, okay. So I go in there and everybody's there. There's 6,500 people in this big theater that's connected to the, and they run dailies, and I don't watch. And he told me, he explained it. He said, these guys and gals will work so hard because they see the results, and it's great because they're watching it. And if it's an electrician, if it's the camera, they're looking about their part of the job. If I go, see that, I brought that, I brought it at the last moment. See those flowers on that table? Fantastic. I did that. Hal saw that. It's great. It's because it's what life is about. It's not how big your part is in life. It's whatever your role is, it's important. Yeah. You can be the props guy. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because you're all contributing.
And you told me the other day.
This was Hal's genius. This was his genius.
And you told
and
me
they
the
all
day
would die for him. They when we had to work a little late, they didn't go, "Well, you're going to have to pay us. We're going to have meal penalty. You go to sir." No, we'll go 30 minutes over. It didn't matter. We'll get it. Everybody's laughing, and so that was magic. That was magic. Yeah. Like I said, this was the
Well, I was gonna say you told me the other day when we chatted that even when you're in that area, that California area, that you'll still get guys that'll yell out, smile at to you who worked on this picture and remember.
The what? Say that again.
You told me the other day when we chatted that when you're in that California in that area, you still get guys that'll recognize you and that worked on the film and will yell out, "Hey, Smilak," and stuff like that, that were whatever, you know, that worked on the film and still remember the experience.
Oh, yeah. That went on forever. That went on all the – I don't go to L.A. anymore. I have a son down there, so I kept going down. No, if I drive down into Los Angeles, I come down to 15 from Montana, and I got to take the pear blossom. I hit the 14. There's somebody listening and knows what I'm talking about. Then I come into the 405, and by the time I get to, you know, Van Nuys Boulevard, my stomach is a knot. It's just – I'm serious. Sure. That's all the rejection and the failure and the cancellation and all this stuff. Except for I got to do Body Slam and I got to do the A-Team and I got to do Battlestar. But other than that, it was one long line of I won't say misery, but I got to meet some wonderful, wonderful people. But the networks hated me, so I couldn't get a job there. But I got to do this. So we were on the brink of something before you asked me about. So I'm walking around in the 90s. In the 2000, last time it happened was probably 2018. Yeah. And I'm walking down, they're going down to Dunhill's. They don't sell cigars there, but I wanted to go down and see the cigars. From across the street, I hear, "Hey, Smilak!" And I turn and look, and this guy gives me a thumbs up. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a part that every guy can identify with. There's a part of Smilak in all of us. Let's be honest. Come on. He's a pretty girl. He just can't resist, and he wants to make money the easy way. He wants to cut a few corners, and he's kind of full of crap. But it's a very, you know, masculine archetype, and it's exaggerated, but it's funny. I was so fortunate to get to be able to do that, and then with Roddy, who had a sense of humor. You had to have to if you're in that. Well, Hulk had one. Hell, Hulk. You know, I got to meet him before I met Roddy. You know, because he did Body Slam. Yeah, and the same, a similar type guy. People think they don't anymore, but in the beginning, that wrestlers are stupid. It's the opposite. You know who's stupid? The actors. The wrestlers, because they're all businessmen, and they understand the thing, and it's the paradox. It's a paradox, but I always say, my line is, truth is buried in paradox. It's always... You know, wrestlers are stupid. But when you get to know them, you find out they're actually smarter than your school teacher. So, we had a bunch of them. We had all those guys. I tell you, it was madness. And even Hal had trouble controlling it sometimes when we did the wrestling stuff. It was... Sure. And I loved it. So I'm flying around doing my part. You know, I had to dress up as a woman and pretend I'm hiding.
That's right.
You know, he's such a coward. He would have done anything. I mean, he would have to avoid getting hurt by the bad guys. And, God, this is.
Yeah. And in the movie, right, you're a music promoter, and then you end up getting drawn to this world of wrestling, right? And then you end up having a hand in marrying rock and
roll.
No,
wrestling. Actually, I was just an agent.
Right.
I was an agent who handled rock bands, rock and roll bands.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my gig. And yeah. then it got in all this trouble with that. So I happened by this office and I see, you've seen the, so I'm in my rush to screw somebody. I think Roddy Piper is a rock artist.
Sure.
And so I squeeze myself into this deal thinking, oh, this guy needs management. So I do it. And then we come outside and I ran into, Lou, what's his
Lou Albano. Yep.
Lou Albano.
Yeah.
And they're going to break my nose. I'm going, wait a minute. That line I have, I'll never forget it. I'm getting ready to get back in my car. I got it. I said, am I missing something here? and that's before the whole movie starts. He's missing the whole thing. He's smoking the cigar with Roddy, and the guy comes up and grabs the cigar, the barbarian, and rips it out of my mouth. I think I said, hey, I'm smoking that. I was smoking that, Woody.
Well, and this is obviously, right, this is a reflection of wrestling at the time with the rock and wrestling connection. And you said you weren't a big wrestling fan, but were you had worked with Hogan. Were you aware of this wrestling presence in entertainment at the time?
Of course. No, I watched it in bits and pieces. It wasn't my thing.
Okay.
I you're going to stand when it really hit. I was doing the A-Team and so I'm like,
busy.
And I had an airplane and I had various girlfriends. So I'm either in the air or I'm on the mattress or I'm doing battles. I'm on the move. I don't watch TV. Yeah. The only thing I watched was the Celtics. And that's a whole other story. So I was in Montana most of the time. I didn't have a TV in Montana. I just had this cabin in the woods by a lake. So I'm living the life that all of these wannabe cowboy like Costner and Sam Elliott. Yeah. I mean, everybody now is buying a ranch in Montana, but they'll never be a Montanan because you got to have grown up here. It's just a sad
Never
fact.
Be Dirk Benedict, will they?
No. So, and the funny thing is I could never get an audition to play a cowboy. In a movie, it's, oh, he's not a cowboy. He don't look like a cowboy. He's too lightweight. He's not funny. He's not serious. He's not. No, everything. I heard everything.
ABC so you're a Celtics fan? Is that what you said?
I was back in the Larry Bird days. So, and I'm doing the A-Team. This is, I love the Celtics ball, the different, and it was so great because it was yin and yang. It was the running gun of the Lakers and show business and all the movie stars. And then you got the guys with their bucket and Larry Bird, a white dude who can't jump. He's not fat. All that, all that. So this was the thing. So whose side am I going to be on?
Yeah.
It's easy. I'm on Hal Neal.
I'm originally from Indiana, right? That's where Larry Bird's from.
Hey, you know where I'm going this year? I'm going to be in Elkhart sometime this
Elkhart,
summer.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to do a convention there. If anybody in Elkhart is listening, don't tell anybody I'm coming because if no, I'm
maybe
going
because
I did love Larry. I love Larry Bird for the way he played the game, and he was a genius. Yeah, and they. And then, the little idiot from Detroit said, oh, if he was a black guy, he'd just be another player. But, what was his name? But anyway, don't get me off on something else.
No. Yeah, we don't want to get off basketball.
Because I'll never talk about this again. Yeah, put this in the archives.
Yeah. Well, the movie is credited to have been written by Shel Lytton and Steve Burkall. But you told me the other day when we talked, right, you and Hal Needham often – did some rewrites, right?
Hal asked you to rewrite
some stuff. And I don't
He didn't. No. Hal didn't ask me to do anything ever. He didn't even ask me to act.
No.
He just said, oh, yeah. He just says, so you want to do this? I show up. We're laughing. We met each other. The first scene is the scene. It's not me driving the Ferrari. The movie starts with that. And I'm driving down. I get to the office. And then I get out and I hand my stub to somebody. And they steal my car because it's been repossessed. That's the opening.
Yeah.
Then I go upstairs and I go into that office. And that office scene was the first scene we shot. And when we did it, and we didn't rehearse. So I go, Hal. So I'm like, and mind you, he's just hired me, 2 weeks maybe. So I'm there, I'm work. So everybody's waiting to see who Harris Mylife's going to be. So I did that scene, and you can go look at what I did. And when it was over, Hal's looking at me like, and I thought, oh shit, he's going to fire me. He's looking at me like, what the F was that? What was, because all that frenetic energy and the fast time, that's really not what he had never seen me do that hyper stuff, just twitchy. It's a little bit of Jack Lemmon and a little bit of, Mel Brooks. It's hyper and it's fast and it's neurotic. Yeah. And it's always changing, going really, 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 like not knowing what you're going to do. It's like kind of confused and always a little pissed off and always trying to. So later I liked it. It was funny as hell, but it's not what I thought you were going to do. He thought I'd be more smooth, like the A-team, and just kind of come in and go, Hey, are you? But I came in anyway. So listen, what you got to do. Just listen to me. I got the thing for you. You just got it. What? What do you want? You got a cute secretary. All that stuff.
Yep.
That. And he loved it. He started digging. So that was the beginning. But I said early on, Hal, because I'm a writer by nature. My real talent is writing, which is
sure. Yeah.
The sad. Yeah, and I haven't done enough of it. So.
Yeah.
So. So I said, Hal, this was early on. That was probably the first day of shooting that scene in the office. I said, Hal, I rewritten the scene we were going to do tomorrow. I got these ideas for what we're, I didn't rewrite other actors or actresses.
Okay.
So he said, no. Oh, I love it. That's great. He didn't say I love it. He didn't talk like that. That's me. He goes, oh, yes. Oh, that's great. Oh, he just laughed. He goes, yeah, that's good. That's good. That's what we'll do. That's what we do. He says, keep bringing me that stuff. So that's what we did. So I would come in, and then Hal had changes. So we kind of shot, I would say, Hal. And some of the stuff we didn't change at all, but a lot of Harry Smilak was rewritten. And at one point, I realized what we were doing.
Yeah,
and I said, Hal.
This.
I said, Hal, because, the writers, I think, he said, don't worry, I have final cut. I'll never forget it. He says, no, it's all right, I have final cut. That's all I know about that. And I think I don't think he had final cut. Here's the other, I'll tell this story. I've never told this story because I'm just leery of talking about this stuff. But so we're like in our second week and we're filming the stuff where I first discover Roddy Piper. He's having that confrontation with the promoter and I sneak in the door. It was that stuff. And we're taking a break and Hal's sitting and there's one of the writers. It's the one of them. Mm-hmm. And they were Beverly Hills lawyers.
Right.
And he's got a bodybuilder's body. One of those guys that has one of those bodies you get in the gym body.
Sure.
And Hal is sitting with his knees, with his elbows on his knees, holding his head. And this guy is bent over, telling Hal Needham, who at one point, Hal Needham's movies have made more money than any other director. This is right about that time with Burt and all that. How many billions? And he's telling him what he needs to do to make this. He says, you need big close-ups of Dirk, really close-ups with him making funny faces. I remember that. And I'm watching this, and Hal, who's, believe it or not a confrontational guy, he's very laid back, and he's just got his elbows on his knees listening, and I lost it. And I grabbed this guy and threw him up against the wall, and they had to pull me off. And I told him, he says, how dare you? and I didn't quite know who he was. I knew he was a producer. I didn't know he also wrote it. I said, get off the, leave this man alone. He's giving you a funny movie. Just, he's, have you, what, who, I unloaded. So that was it. So now somebody went out and made t-shirts for the whole cast and crew that said, Harry Smilak kicks ass. I would love to have one of those. So yeah. I wore it with pride. Harry Smilak kicks ass. And Hal says, you know, Dirk, you know, I'm whatever, 55 years old. Nobody has ever stood up for me over anything like that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's a bond. And he deserved it. He deserved it. It was all. And I think that has something that we did. We didn't change the story. The story was great. I mean, The story was great. The situation was great. Everything was great. The dialogue is, there are a lot of brilliant screenwriters that can't write snappy dialogue. I happen to be able to do it. So I've just, and then after it was over, these people took Hal's final cut and made it not so final and tried to take out everything that Hal and I changed. So The movie you're seeing is the movie without most. There are still, I saw it once. They had a screening and I went to it, and Graham, an English gentleman who's the line producer, he was there and he had tears in his eyes. He was crying because of everything, how they destroyed the movie. But it was, so I saw it and it was heartbreaking, but it was still, it's still, I shouldn't tell us because people think they're seeing a funny movie when they're seeing it.
Well, it is,
you know,
a funny
so
movie.
So it was sad, you know, it was, that's why I could never talk about it. I could never, because it got lost in vanity and ego, and all Hal and I wanted to do was make this movie, give it what it deserved. And you know, it got caught up in silly, these people, whoever did that. So I asked Hal, he would just shake his head. He didn't want to talk about it. So I don't know. Cause he did tell me he had final cut. And then we would get together and have a drink, you know, for the next 4 or 5 years. And It was painful because we had this, and I say, Hal, what happened? The movie got a wonderful review in Vanity. Mm-hmm. Our Variety, Vanity, should have been Vanity, Variety. And It said Dirk Benedict is ready for the big screen. Now, every actor who's doing a TV show would like to move on and be starring. So, and then it never got released. It was never released. It went for years. I don't know. I think it disappeared. Dino Laurentiis at one point held the rights to it. And somebody put out a VCR thing, tape. And,
and it was supposed to be a big summer release for Orion, but there was all these lawsuits, and it is very peculiar, right? Because I don't work in the business, but that's not the first case of actors kind of ad-libbing a little bit, right? And modifying the lines to fit them.
No, but I only time I ever met the people that wrote it, I threw one of them up against the wall. So that's all I know.
that might have irritated
him. But why would you destroy something? Why wouldn't you not want to? Because you're going to make, I never understood it. Everybody's going to make money. And why would you destroy it just to get even with Dirk Benedict and Hal Needham? But there are people like that. There are people, he's a lawyer, a Jewish lawyer, or they were. So I don't know. I'm talking about, see, I'm going to get sued now. I don't even remember their names. No, I'm so old now. There's nothing left. They can sue my corpse. Jesus. Yeah. It's heartbreaking, but this happens a lot. It's kind of an old story. A lot of people go, oh yeah, I made them, but seldom. And they had three movies. They had Platoon. They had Hoosiers with the legendary Gene Hackman. They had a Body Slam, which was their summer movie. It was for the summer of 87. And that was it. And they were, the feedback, because we had the line producer representing Orion on the set all the time. And he's a wonderful English guy. He was so great, Graham. And he's just laughing. He's, you know what, Bob? He's going, oh, this is, and they're so excited. He kept saying, because they're looking at Danish. They're so excited. Oh, they know this is going to make money. So I don't know. But then, you know, those other movies won Academy Awards and made people movie stars. And I'm still sitting in front of a wood stove drinking black coffee and dreaming about buying an 18-year-old bottle of Macallan's. No, my favorite scotch, for those of you out there listening, I know you say, oh, I'm going to send it. Bowman. I'm just telling you that for Bowman. Bowman, for the price, is the best single malt scotch, I think.
Yeah, I like scotch. Well, and again, the movie ended up coming out straight to a video or whatever.
Did it? Yeah.
Eventually. But do you have any?
Yeah, but that was 5 years, 6 years
that
later.
That was later, right? That was much.
Yeah,
later.
Yeah, I knew about that, but you know, that was like.
Do you?
That's
have
like
any
the
idea?
Girl I fell in love with who dumped me. You know, and 20 years later, she goes, calls me up and says, "You know, I still love you." Oh, yeah. Really? You do? Well, you know what? Yeah.
Do you have any idea who owns the rights to the movie now?
I wish I did. I would go around and I would do evenings. I would book a theater. Harry Smilak presents Harry Smilak. Smilak presents Smilak. Come and get you. And then I would sell hair oil called Smilak's Secret.
There
or Smilak's, you know, I would do a shampoo, Harry Smilak shampoo.
If that movie,
I would have done Harry Smilak condoms. All I need is the rights and a couple, and I would just go from town to town to town, because I and I would go out after all and do Q and A after the movie, do Q and A, and
yeah, be great.
Wouldn't that have been fun?
And you may not know, but is there any chance that that original cut of the movie exists anywhere?
I wish I knew. Hal's gone. You know, he passed away like 2 years now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Never know.
You know,
right?
What you did, all those things. Well, that was, we were on film. It's probably cut digitally. Yeah, this is, of course it was, 86. So there might be something around somewhere. You'd have to ask somebody. Orion's gone, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm sure they've been absorbed into something over the years. But
so you have to find out where they're. Well, that stuff. Somebody. Yeah, if I was younger and richer, if I was a George Clooney or something, I would try and trace it down. But
get my
hands on it. And I don't know who owns it now.
When you do appearances, right? So conventions and different things. And now do you get fans that come up for this movie? Because you're
do.
A film star. You're an A-team. How many people come up and say, it's a Smilak guy?
Well, it depends. I'll get it in Indiana, but all my shows were popular in the blue collar areas of America.
That's right.
Which is great. But that's the thing I talked at the beginning, how lucky I am that I got to do these shows, you know, in spite of all the resistance from the liberals, you know, all the women were ahead of casting. Wouldn't cast me, wouldn't let me, you know, for Battlestar, they said I wasn't sexy enough. For the A-Team at NBC, they said I wasn't good looking enough. And at CBS, they were a little more blunt, just said, it's just the dumbest, most boring actor I've ever, that was the head of casting at CBS. So I wasn't good looking, I was boring, and I wasn't sexy. So those are the only three networks you could get a job at that time. So I never had a job. Name one other thing I did besides Battlestar. Aaron used to hire me. I'd go do a Love Boat or something to try and not starve to death.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I went broke eventually, you know, after all that, because in 8 years I had one job and I finally left and came up and sat down by the fire with a cigar and I'm still sitting here.
See, I always
I'm still in front of the fire with some black coffee and a cigar going, what the hell happened? What was that about? No, I get it. I couldn't explain it then. It was I was canceled. And I don't want to go into this, but I was canceled.
No.
Back then, I finally figured out I'd been graylisted, blacklisted. There were people, but they were World War II people. The generation of World War II loved me. That's the only reason I got those two jobs, was because older heterosexual guys still had some clout. But the younger, my generation of of gay and metrosexual and feminist hated me. Just, and I would walk in a room and their toes would curl, and not in a good way. They go, yeah. Oh God, this guy.
I'm a little taken aback by that, because I always viewed Dirk Benedict as a sex symbol, a Hollywood sex symbol. That's how I always viewed you. Because again, you were always there in my life through Battlestar, through 18.
I'm not saying what they said was true. They're stupid. It's the same reason they say Donald Trump is a Nazi. Do you think Donald Trump is a Nazi?
I don't know.
Well, then you're stupid. Well, then you're stupid. Okay. Well, do you know what a Nazi is? I was called a Nazi.
Well,
and that, when I started doing Dinah Shore and Merv Griffin after Battlestar, they called me a Nazi. And I had spent a lifetime studying this thing because I couldn't figure out how something like that could happen. Now I know exactly why. And so they're calling you a Nazi. This is like, they're lucky. It's criminal. It's slander. Yeah. Then I'm going to send people to the ovens. They think Trump's going to send people to the ovens. That's what Nazis did. No, I'm serious. They throw this word out like, come on.
So that's why
I ran into those people and they did not like me, because first of all, you got to remember I smoked cigars. I was the only young guy. How do you think I met George Burns and Milton Berle and Jackie Cooper, who later quit? I think his wife made him quit. But how did I meet lots of older gentlemen who are not famous? Cigars, because I was the only young guy. Later in the 90s, it got popular and trendy. I remember I did a guest shot on, this is when I was up here in the log cabin and I hadn't had a job for 8 years. And I got it to say, hey, they want you to do a guest shot on Chuck Norris show.
Oh, Walker, Texas Ranger?
Walker. So I had to do it. It was $5,000 lousy damn dollars. So I had to go do it because I got two little boys. My wife is gone. I'm up there in this cabin. And so I got this lady to stay with the boys for a week and I went and did this show. But what was the point of this? I don't know. Walker, Texas Rangers.
About cigars.
Oh, cigars. So Chuck Norris gave me a lecture. So I'm smoking a cigar sitting outside on the set in Texas. And he gave me a lecture on how healthy cigars are. He just went on, you know, because the health nut, he's the toughest guy in the world. And then lo and behold, about 3 years later, Chuck Norris has his own cigar line.
Because
he's one of those businessmen and he'll sell anything. He's like Harry Smilak. Oh, cigars are popular. Chuck Norris, I think it was called the Lone Wolf Cigar. So all of a sudden, Chuck Norris is selling his own, which is fine, but it's a little hypocritical. When he lectured me on how even now he's got his own line. I remember I'm up in Montana and I go into this little cigar and there's these, what are these? Oh, Chuck Norris has got his,
Well, tell me this, right? Swinging back to the wrestling connection in the movie, wrestling fans are by nature very nostalgic. And lots of wrestling fans.
Are they?
They are.
Why?
And so, I don't know. They just are. They love the history of wrestling. They love they love their favorites of the past. And some of that transposes over to this movie, Body Slam. There are lots of independent toy companies out there and things that are making figures. I think Dirk Benedict needs to tap in, and we need some Harry Smilak.
Well, they need to hire me to come and promote it for them. Hire me to come and come out with a Harry Smilak doll. Oh my God. Good. I'll promote the crap out of it. But somebody, we got to get a copy of the movie and at these conventions, because they want me to, you know, the A-Team was never a movie. Well, it was eventually, but it wasn't really the A-Team.
But the TV show.
I would go, I would love to do your convention. I get a lot of requests. I do very few, because I can't handle airports anymore and crowded airplanes. But I could go there with a copy of Body Slam and take one of the balloons and have 100, 200, 300. Last time I spoke, there were 500 people. I would just talk, and we could run this movie. And people who hadn't even seen it might say,
"That's right.
Hey, let's watch this." And then whoever owns it will make money, and we'll get nothing. So.
I agree. Dirk Benedict.
But it would be a great idea. I'm not a businessman. I get good ideas, but I would need somebody else to do that.
Well, you're booked off of Battlestar. You're booked off of anything. Yeah, it's time that we get you in that wrestling circuit and well, book off the Body Slam.
Yeah. I got an invite by Dana White, I was told, to come to, what's it called, the slap or the punch?
What's it called? Yeah, I know what you're talking about, though. Yeah, the slap. I don't know what
it's in Vegas in a couple of weeks. It won me, so I got to have the A-team here. I want to bring Dirk Benedict down. And so I got a call from his guy. And I said, great. But they wouldn't pay me airline tickets. So I said, no.
Yeah. No. Well, let me tell you this, right? Body Slam is, you know, again, it's got a little bit of a cult following. And when you watch it, it's from 86. It's this great representation of 1986, right? This combination of music and wrestling and comedy and everything that was happening at that time.
And Tanya Roberts.
And Tanya Roberts, who's
looking like that. Right? Oh yeah, all that Harry Smilak, you know, drooling over Tanya. That's very 80s. That's it, all gone right? Now. That you can't do that, but that was unless it's a bad guy, but it's
she was in everything, right? I mean, she was whatever show you watched in the 80s, Tanya Roberts would show up in it at some point.
Yeah, she would.
I mean, she was all over.
We never got into Tanya Roberts' stories during this movie. I can't really tell them. Her language was so... I worked with cowboys and truckers, and I worked in the woods in Montana. I never heard this kind of language. She knew all those words, and she would spew them out. It was like, I guess maybe I'm naive. We would all kind of, I can't tell these stories, or maybe I can. We're on there. Huh?
Well, yeah.
I loved her, but she, so I'll tell you the story. The first day she worked, it was nighttime. You can always cut this out. It's not that bad. I just won't use her language. But I'm sitting with Hal.
You can say whatever you want. We have no language limitations, Dirk. You can say whatever you want.
No.
Okay,
well, I have no vocabulary. I use my one big word. I forget what it was. I spent all day looking for a big word. What was it?
I don't remember.
Luddite. I said, Luddite. I'm not a Luddite. Yeah, I looked. No, it's the first, it's probably a week or so into the show, and it's her first day of work.
Okay.
It's actually night, and we're filming the scene of the big, you know, the banquet at the convention hall where the guy's who's running for Senate, and she's there, and Harry's involved in all this. He got involved in the organization because he wants to get laid and all this. Yep. So she shows up.
Providing music, right? For the music for the convention.
Right. They're providing the music. This is going to be, I'm on. And so I'm sitting in the hall.
Okay.
And we're in this room attached to the main auditorium. It's about the size of a basketball court. Okay. So we're sitting in one corner, Hal and I, in our actor director chairs, you know, the high ones, we're important people talking about.
Sure.
I wonder what Oliver Stone is doing now because we're killing it. So we're sitting there and the door opens, catty corner, the furthest corner, the door comes open and in walks Tanya Roberts with hair girl, a makeup girl, and a wardrobe person. And they come in. And Tanya Roberts says, "Where's that fucking Dirk Benedict? I heard about you." She's so drunk. And she's kind of, and gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. And she's coming. She's got that outfit on that she wore in the scene. And she's kind of, I mean, she's walking good, but there's a little exaggerated sway.
Sure.
And all the way, she's calling me all these names, which I have heard before because I'm a Republican and I'm in Hollywood. So I've been called all these names, but never.
But you, like, have you ever met Tanya before this? Is this the first time meeting?
No, no. But I, okay. Everybody hated. I never met the head of casting at ABC, but she hated. Sure. I never met him. But somehow she knew I was a misogynist. She knew I hated women. I used to say, well, I'll give you some names. I mean, there's some ladies that think I'm too polite. Don't get me started on that, because that's a disease, a cancer in the soul of America that's destroying it. Destroyed the little boys. So now all the chauvinism is gone. Nobody opens doors or anything. So women got what they wanted. But meanwhile, I'm dealing with Tanya Bowers, and I'm sitting with Hal, and we look at each other, and we don't know whether to laugh or cry. I mean, and Hal, God bless him. I mean, he can handle anything, but he says to me, he goes, holy shit. Oh, my God. He said, I said, Hal, you know, I love you. I can do anything. I'm working with T and George and Dwight. It's craziest stuff. We go, but this, I'm not going to work with. And in the SAG rules, I don't have, alcohol is banned, and I don't have to work with somebody who's drunk. I can't do it. She can't. I mean, he pleads. He's, oh, Dirk, you can do it. No. Bert would do it, right, Hal? Bert would do it. Tell me Bert would do it. No. I'm making that up. He didn't say that. That's my brain.
Okay, gotcha.
He didn't say it.
Okay.
But he's saying, pretty Dirk, you got it. We can. And I knew why, because they've rented the hall. It's expensive. Uh-huh. They got probably 500 extras for the thing, the benefit. And it's a huge, and it's all night. It's like, so I did. And so the scene where she pulls up in the limousine, and then I walk with her into the convention, and she's supposed to be ignoring me with her head in the air, you know, because I'm this sleazeball, and she knows what I'm all. So, but she couldn't stand and walk, so I had to hold her up and pretend like I was chasing her. So I'm holding her up. Meanwhile, I'm going, oh, I forget the character's name. You know, Sandra. But I got to hold her up. And she, I'll give her this. She said her lines. They came out. So that was a lot of improvisation. I had to do filler. And that was the only time that she was inebriated. It was nerves. She was terrified. She literally, somebody had told her that I was a beast, and she's working with Hal, who's a chauvinist. So, and there she is, and it's her first day, and she was just nervous.
Yeah.
She was fine after that, but she was still, oh God, I can't tell these stories. She was still, she just had a mouth on her. I don't want to do it. No, but that was the only time. But she would get in my face. She would just accuse me of all kinds of stuff. You know, because I was kind of good looking and all that. You think I fuck more guys that look like you than you can even.
Oh.
I go, oh, I'm sure you have it, Tanya. I bet you have too, right, Dirk, huh? Oh, God. Oh, man. Hal and I would just, at the end of the day, we would laugh. So at the end of the day, the dailies, everybody has a drink. It never got rowdy or anything. It was very, very professional. It was fantastic. The next day, everybody was so gung-ho. We were having so much fun making this movie that nobody will ever see. If you'd have told us what was going to happen, I just would have got my suitcase and left, because I couldn't handle it. I could not handle the pain of all of this, one of all these people, and a lawsuit somewhere ended it without it. Just stupid. It makes no sense. It doesn't make sense financially, or I don't get it. I never did understand. It's 30 years later, and I don't even. That's why I've never talked about this, you know, officially. Every now and then I'll, at conventions, people say, so how about Harry Smilak? I always go, hey, you, stand up, leave the room. You are forbidden to mention Harry's name. May he rest. I am not going to put him through this.
And wait, here we are doing a long form on
he
it, right?
He worked his little, yeah.
Yeah, we
oh,
got, I
God,
mean,
so we had all the rest of us staying at the motel. And, the barbarians, I forget. So,
one night I'm in my bed. Yeah.
I'm in my bed and I hear pounding on what I find out is a door. You know, boom, boom, boom. Three pound. Boom, boom, boom. And then I hear somebody yell, I can't remember. Let's say it's Stella, like, because it's a lot like Marlon Brando in Streetcar. Stella! Somebody's yelling a girl's name. Stella! Okay. Nothing. And then it's quiet. And then boom, boom. Stella! And it's going, I go, oh my God. Somebody, so go out. So this one wrestler was doing this. He was going from door to door trying to find Sally because he was in love with her and he had to have her. So he's going down and he's breaking the doors. He's breaking the doors. It's like, so Hal comes out. So finally, you know, the police come, San Bernardino police. They were there, three or four cop cars and this. And I got to work there. And we all get, and I'm watching. They get him. And he got a little bit, they got him in cuffs finally. Well, he didn't punch it. He kind of resisted, but he didn't try any moves from his profession. Yeah. I'll never forget this. And I'm on a balcony. I'm up and I'm looking down and it goes under me and they're going to put him in this cop car. And he's still yelling for Sandy. Sandy! Because he's in love, you know. And this is what a guy does. So as they walk by the window, he takes his head and slams it into the window, the dash, the window pane of the cop car, and it shatters. The whole thing shatters. It doesn't fall through, but it's so thick you can't drive it. You can't see out of it.
Yeah,
unbelievable. And he did. And then they take him to another, put him in. So the next day I go to work and there he is, because he's one of the star wrestlers, one of the barbarians, and he's in makeup. He's in the makeup chair, and I forget his name. Hey boo, you had some fun last night, huh? He just looked at me with those crazy eyes, and they were putting makeup, trying to cover, because he had stitches and he had bruises and he had but he was like, it didn't happen, you know. He's gonna I don't know where Sandy was. A gal that worked at the hotel, I said, well, who was Sandy? You know, she works there, and he fell in love. Oh God, Hal. And then, okay, let me tell one quick story, because the wrestling thing, because I could do 2 hours about it. So
go ahead.
We rented that big arena in San Bernardino. I don't know where it was, and it was the big event when Smilax team is wrestling the Barbarians. You know, Roddy and.
Yep.
And what's his name?
Tonga. But it's
Tonga Tom and Tonga. Yeah. So and I'm there refereeing, you know, it's so funny. I'm like the guy. I got eventually thrown out of the, when they picked me up and tossed me out of there. Remember that? Oh God. And that's when I ran and put on a dress. I put on a dress, anything to hide from the bad guys. So they're doing all that all wrestling sequence. And they had about five or six cameras, but they had to stop and do retakes. Okay, cut. All right, do it. So now it's all being slowed down. And we had about, I would guess, 5,000 extras, less, maybe more. And so now they're starting to giggle when some of these amazing athletic wrestling moves happen, because it's being broken into its parts. It's like you see a beautiful home, you go, oh my God. Then you show how they made it, and you go, oh my God. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they just put pants in. Yeah, so he's showing how you build it, which you never want to do if you're a baker, if you're a pianist, don't show them practicing scales. It's boring. Don't show them. Hal was doing that without realizing it, and it was starting to So the audience is starting to laugh, giggle, laugh, and go, oh, see how fake it is? So Roddy, he told me later, you know, of course, we didn't say anything, but we just knew. So when they started the next sequence, they did it for real. They hit each other. So now they're really fighting. They're really fighting. I mean, and there's blood. Roddy Piper's getting, it's like, and it's violent. I swear to God, it spooked me. And I'm just sitting up in the balcony, or not the balcony, in the seats, you know, like 50 feet away going, we're saying, oh, don't ever forget this, because this is going to be a big successful movie and you can talk about this when you, you know. So I never saw Hal. He's down on it, and he jumps through the ring and gets in there, and they grabbed Hal and threw him out of the ring. Not Roddy and or Tonga Tom, but the other grabbed him and just tossed him. Yeah. I'm serious. So the police came in and had to stop this fight between Roddy, and everybody's bloody, and the whole thing stopped. For, I don't know if we kept filming or not. I can't remember. Scared the crap out of me. It was truly. So I talked to Roddy afterwards. Oh, it makes me emotional. He was so cool. And he's got blood and bruises, which is a, and he's laughing. I'm going, God, Roddy, that was spooky. And he's smiling. Yeah. Well. And he's laughing. He said, well, we had to do it. And I go, Jesus. I said, so how are you with me? You're good with me. You're happy with what I'm doing. You're not going to have to do this with me, right? I'm okay. I'm okay, right? Yeah. I haven't insulted you, have I? Have I? Have I? No, because he was such a sweet soul, you know. I mean, he had.
Yeah.
I saw the other quality. I did see, and there I saw it scared the crap out of me. It's like, you know, it's like finding out your wife can bake. I mean, it's such a shock, you know. You don't know what.
But he had to convince those extras, right? That
what?
He had to convince those extras and turn them back.
They weren't even, well, they were extras, but there were a thousand of them, at least 2,000, 3,000. They couldn't let that happen because the truth is they were making cleaner. They're cleaning it up for the movie because when you do something over and over and over and over and over, you can't go 100%, you know. We, in the A-team, we didn't really hit each other, believe that or not. We didn't really shoot each other. I sometimes have to explain this. You know, I didn't really kiss the girls. I pretended to.
Yeah.
You know, to sometimes later I kissed them, but never. I always tell people when I did the A-team, I had a stunt double. And they said, did you have a stunt double? I say, well, yeah. Not for the fighting or the stuff, but, you know, for the kissing. I had a stunt double. I never kissed those girls.
Yeah, you did.
I said, the camera would be over her shoulder on me. That's me. But I never touched her lips because you can't tell because you're from. And then when I came around to be on her, my Norman Howells, my stunt double, who then went to work for Kevin Costner, probably does his kissing too. He came in and would kiss the girls. And then I heard from the girls. They liked it. He was much better kisser than me. So that all worked out. Yeah. I don't think I ever got to kiss Tanya Roberts, now that I think of it. I would have been afraid. I would have been afraid to.
Yeah, yeah.
She scared me. Yeah, she was an animal. You had to be a different kind of man. I wasn't manly enough. Harry couldn't handle that. Oh God, he was so shallow. I loved it. It brought out all my. Oh God! And then at the end, and this movie was wonderful. They had at the end, Harry wakes up and goes, "Hey," and he befriends the Roddy and. And the little girl, his daughter, and Roddy, I just found out, had a daughter.
Sure.
Was just a year old, I think. Two years old, yeah. Well, maybe she'll hear this. About her dad, yeah. Well, I knew him in a different way than most of the people because we just did acting together, you know.
Yeah. Well, when you look back on Body Slam, right, it has to be a little bittersweet for you, right? Because you talk about enjoying it and having such a good time and this positivity of, hey, this is going to be something. And then it's pulled out from under you. No theatrical release. So it's, I mean, it's...
Yeah,
it's
and I got a rave. On top of it, the only review I got in Hollywood that was great was for this movie, and it was in Variety. It was on the front page, and it said, Dirk Benedict is ready for the big screen. You don't know what that means. You have no clue.
Yeah,
no, you don't get it. I'm sorry. You're in Florida, for God's sakes. It's like the biggest thing you got is when somebody catches a tarpon. Oh, I caught a tarpon. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. On your first try.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't happen. And, you know, I could have come out and become Bruce Willis or been another Bruce Willis. I would have gone on maybe had a movie career. But and this was, you know, Variety's read by everybody. So yep. People would ask me for the next 8 years, what are you doing? You got a movie? You got a this? You got a that? I said, no. For 8 years, I had one job. And nobody could figure out, well, how come you're not working? How come you're not? How come you're not? How come you're not? Now we understand why. I was a
one
Republican.
Lawsuit.
It was because I voted for Reagan and I supported Reagan.
Yeah. I'm just talking about this movie, though. I'm just talking about this movie.
Oh, the movie. Everything is related. How do we know that that's not why it was canceled? It was that wouldn't surprise me because my character was a misogynist. He was everything that the women that were taking over Hollywood hated. They didn't find that funny. Harry Smilak lusting after this luscious. That made them so mad, angry. So that's why, and I played that character in Battlestar and then later in the A-Team, which when I would walk into an office, they knew I was that guy. I was this guy who just wanted to have sex with every pretty woman. Because we know guys are not like that. They don't want to do that. They never lust after beautiful women or any kind of woman. Oh, my God.
Whatever the case may be, it's such a fun movie. It's such a great slice, again, in 1986.
It was a popcorn movie. It was a giggle. It was a laugh. But it got caught up in something sinister. I don't care if it's political correctness or I think that's why Hal would have told me if it had been the lawsuit. If there had, I didn't hear that from him. Somebody told me, well, there was a lawsuit. They got sued because I don't know. There was a lawsuit, and then I heard. Next thing I heard, well, Orion's Dino Durante's Productions owns it now. They own it, and they brought it out on BCN tape. You know. Like I said, it's the love of your life that. That was the best and the worst experience.
Yeah. Well, and now go ahead.
But I'm glad I did it. It all went so fast as things do when you're having fun. The things that last forever, the misery, you know, the difficult times go, the time moves slowly. But when you're having fun, I mean, I don't know. I think we shot it in 8 weeks, 2 months. And it was laughter from beginning to end. I mean, I told you a few of the stories. a few of the stories. It was great.
Well, and again, you're out there making some appearances here and there. You were just in Dallas recently, and everything, and you're still doing a few. And you've got this great page on Facebook for you called Dirk Benedict Central. Which was formerly run by John Picard, right? That was his name, and he passed away.
Yeah, I knew. I got to know him pretty well. It was it still is run by some, not by me. I don't run it or anything. But it was a gal up in Canada, and then she retired, and John took it over, and he was one guy. He just died last about 4 months ago. And now this gal who I don't really know. I think of an Aaron. She's taking over, and she's doing a hell of a job. I don't go online much because I'm starting to cough. This is what happens when I go more than 2 hours without a cigar. You should see what happens when I go without sex. You think this cough is bad?
I don't know. I don't even
Everything's
see that.
A joke. Everything's a joke.
That's right.
I saw Mr. T in Dallas, by the way. Mr. T. We got together. It was just like old times. We just giggled.
Yeah.
I always tell people it was 18. Like I said, it was a giggle. And then on my hiatus, I got to go do Body Slam. I went back and tried to tell Dwight and T what it was like. They didn't get it. they didn't believe me. I said, man, I just, you guys are okay, but T, you're no Roddy Piper, okay? I had so much fun, so much fun. And then, of course, it never, so they thought I was making it up because it never got released. I said, yeah. No, here's my clipping. Roddy said I was a really good actor. See? It really happened. Gosh, the story of my career.
The story of my career. I never had a movie. Well, I was in Rocky III.
It's what?
I said, did T ever rub it in your face? I was in Rocky III.
No, he never did. He's a sweet guy. He's a lot like Roddy. All those guys, I imagine the more I met, the more they'd be like that. Those tough guys are the ones that are real gentlemen. It's the ones that are the a-holes are the wannabe tough guys. They're the guys with the gym bodies who pretend to be. But the legitimate guys, everyone I've ever met, going back to when I worked on, growing up in Montana, the tough guy was always quiet. That was the guy you didn't want to mess with. He wasn't the guy mouthing off on how he was going to kick your ass. He was the guy who was quietly watching you.
Yeah. Well, and again, everybody who wants to follow Dirk can go and look up Dirk Benedict Central. Again,
look up Dirk Benedict Central.
I have to thank them all, from John up to the new Erin, for helping set this up. Right?
Erin, she's good. She's young. She's too smart for me. She talks fast and she types fast and everything is fast. And I was never fast. I was always, only time I was fast is when I played characters like Harry Smilak or Templeton Peck. How lucky was I? Templeton Peck and Body Slam. God forbid they remake Body Slam without me. I will hunt them down. I will hunt them down. I will. So people used to ask me who I wanted to play Face Man, and I would say this about Harry Smilak. And now I just went blank on his name. He was in France. He played the guy that just died, very sadly. What's his name? Come on, he was. You saw Friends.
Oh yeah, Matthew Perry.
Matthew Perry. Yeah, I read his book. Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful book. Really smart guy. But his comedy, the way he was in Friends, he could do Harry Smilak with the twitchy thing of the Harry Smilak.
What did you think of Bradley Cooper's Face Man?
I'm never going to see the movie. I sent my sons I was invited to the premiere, but I'm old and wise. I know better. But my sons went, and they told me, "Yeah, Dad, you wouldn't like it. It's not the A-Team. Yeah. It's kind of an action movie. It's an all right." Well, I saw what Liam Neeson. I was in New York. I was in London, in England, touring the United Kingdom, playing.
Columbo. You told me about this. Is this the Columbo?
Yeah, on stage for 18 weeks, different cities. Yeah. It was great because it was originally a play on Broadway with Thomas Mitchell and Joseph Cotten. So they asked me to go. So I was doing that when the A-Team came out or just before it came out. And there was a quote from Liam Neeson in the London Times, and they asked him, so is your show going to be like, your movie going to be like? And you say, oh, no, we took all the corny stuff out. That's a quote. We took all the corny stuff out because he's a serious liberal, you know, and you can't be corny unless you're Mel Brooks, and who knows what he was. So they took all the stuff out of the A-Team, which made it popular. In other words, we're going to destroy what made this pop because they're so stupid. They're so hung up on. So he played Hannibal as this macho, which he does in everything. Taken 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. It's the same. Liam is always the same. He's always a tough guy, a cousin, and he's Swedish, isn't he? You know, they're only funny when they're drunk. But so, who else have I had? My first movie was in Sweden. I made it. Maya Angelou wrote it. You should hear her about that experience. You can't any longer, but I could do a whole 2-hour phone call about, it was called Georgia, Georgia. And she wrote it, and it was filmed in Stockholm. So, and it never got released.
Not really my thing, but.
It never got released.
Story of your career, right?
Every movie I was in. I did a snake movie for Richard Zanuck and David Brown at Universal Studios with Strudemeyer. It got released for about 2 weeks, and it was gone. I did, Georgia, Georgia was a movie that gone. I did Oh, I did Underground A's Gone. All these right. had all these. I did a movie had all these stars in it. It was called Underground Aces. Yeah, it was a thing. It was a, like right. a mad world. It had everybody in it: Jerry Orbach and Vincent Price and all these people. Yeah, Tony Randall, and I could go on. Gone.
A great, because I was body of work. Great body Ooh. Of work that nobody saw, right?
Yeah. I am the wannabe movie actor who I kept doing them, and the first one I did was in Sweden, that one, and I was a stage actor, never out of work, 5 years, never out of work. Literally, I go from one play to the next, ended up starring on Broadway with Gloria Swanson, which is the high point of my acting career. It's the most amazing thing I ever accomplished as an actor, and nobody knows about it. But that's the way life is. That's the paradox. The truth of me is that was my dream. That's as far as I never. So I did one movie because I got cast in New York, came back, told my agent never again. I don't like acting in front of the camera. So what did I end up doing for the next 30 years?
TV.
Yeah. Acting in front of the camera. And if you got another 2 hours. Yeah, I got. And it's a big lesson. I should have just said no to the second movie. I knew a second movie was Richard Zanuck. Met Richard Zanuck, met movie stars, met George Roy Hill, Paul Newman, Robert Redford, had a great adventure. But as far as a career, it was not something I wanted.
Yeah.
And if you're doing something you don't enjoy, even if you're good at it, don't do it.
Yeah.
McConaughey wrote about this in his book. He said, I'm really good at rom-coms, but I don't enjoy doing them.
Yeah.
So he did them, got paid millions. And then I'll do it. Then, so I don't know how many he's done. And then he finally broke out and he's done some interesting films. But he's got enough money, he could send some to me.
He could, yeah.
He's well, some wonderful actors. He's got, but Cooper's a good actor. He was just, he can't help it. He didn't write it. He's just a product of Hollywood. You know, they didn't want to make the A-Team. They hated us. Hollywood hated the A-Team. I told you these stories. I never... People would come up and whisper in my ear, terrified. Somebody would hear them say, Dirk, I want you to know, I like the show. I like the show. This is on the street in Beverly Hills. Oh, or at a little gap. Oh, Dirk, I actually like the A-Team. Yeah. And I think it's very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because it was guns. It was cigars. And I was a chauvinist, woman hating. And George was a misogynist. And poor Mr. T, he was an Uncle Tom. Literally, they called him that because he played the Santa in Reagan's White House.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Oh my God! How could you do that? Reagan's a Nazi. Oh my God! And he went there. Well, he sat on the Nancy sat on his lap. Oh, so.
Yeah, well, I could talk to you for 2 hours about A-Team. I could talk to you for 2 hours about Battlestar. But
yeah, we could. We talked about body size. No,
we talked about body size. A team
would take. I could teach a class. I could teach a semester. I could teach a 3 month class. Yeah. Somebody should hire me. Somebody asked me to come and speak University of Missouri, Southern University, something there. Gamecocks or whatever they're called down there in Cape Girardeau, they'd come and speak about the movie I made that Maya Angelou wrote called Georgia, Georgia. And it was a great experience. It was very rewarding. And I thought, you know, this is what I should be doing because I talk so much and I live alone. So I'm talking to myself now. And you know what's going to happen next? And you're going to hear about it.
What's
Dirk
that?
Benedict. No, lock me up. They're going to, you know, he's in a home in Montana. They found him. He's walking the streets talking to himself,
which I do.
But you know, just because you talk to him doesn't mean you're crazy.
No. If you ever need anybody to talk to, Dirk, you just call me, and I'll talk
call
to you.
Call you up, yeah.
There you go.
Put me on the radio. Well, I'm kind of hard to track down, as you know.
That's right.
And bless
That's
you.
Right.
You were very – you stuck to it, and I admire that. And then, you know, just as I commit it, and then I'm sitting here. My son comes in, with my two little granddaughters who are 4 and a half, and they're going to go sleigh riding because of all the snow. And I was like a little boy. I go, and I can't go. So I said, well, I'll call him. I'll cancel. I'm going to go Slater. I have my granddaughter. To hell with that. Talking about something that happened 30 years ago. Who cares?
Yeah.
What do I get? Well, by the way, how much do I get paid for these golden stories?
Well, we'll talk about that off air. We'll discuss those terms.
Okay. All right. Yeah. You'll hang up so quick. It'll make Harry Smilak jealous.
That's right. Well, yeah, that's right. I'll give you the Smilak deal.
Give me the Smilak. Yeah, okay, yeah, I'll pay. So next week I'll meet you down at the Midway Tavern. I'll give you,
that's right.
Well, like $50, right? That's what we said, $50.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
I got so many stories. I always said I don't do talk shows because I don't want to give them away. Because they, you know, Fred Astaire was a friend, and I got Elizabeth Taylor. Dang it. Gloria Swanson.
Tell you. Dirk, you need to write a book.
I did. I've written two. Have you read them? No. So why write another book that nobody reads?
A book
nobody reads.
I do. Nobody reads. I wrote two books
about my life. I've written two.
Oh.
Now you're a multi. You know a lot about me, but have you said, oh, I wrote a couple books? I'll buy them. No. People don't buy books. Not the kind I. No. Well, they might.
I have thousands of books. I have a library. Unbelievable numbers, but I will admit I don't have your books. But I'm sorry, but I don't.
I did. I just did that show. I just did a show in, where was I? It was Dallas, Plano.
Dallas, and, yeah.
I had three people come up with a copy of my one book saying, your book saved my life. One of them had her mother with us. Said, you know, we want to thank you because, you know, 4 years ago she was told to, you know, get ready to, because she was going to die. It's nothing else. I got hundreds of letters of it like this. It's a very important book, and it just sells the same amount every year. But then I had about four people come up, two guys and two girls, and saying, this book saved me because they're in the hell of not knowing what to eat. And they finally reached the end of the road, and they read this book and go, oh. And it's not I'm not a guru. It's just, and it's not new stuff. It's actually old stuff, but it's the journey I took. And I started it in Sweden when I was doing that movie.
Yeah.
For Maya.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
I should tell Maya Angelou's stories. Maya and Tanya Roberts were opposite sides of the same coin. Very similar. Yeah. Very loud. Very outspoken. Yeah. Very confrontational. Very. Maya's was very spiritual and hers was very physical. Very, what's the opposite of spiritual? It's
sure you go.
You know, the world of the flesh.
Yeah.
Well, Maya was everything. She was everything. She was a little too much. But we became buddies. Yeah. Okay. All right. That's it.
Well,
Harry Smile. My makeup is starting to run.
All right. Well, then we'll let you go.
Before only guy I let that you wears. Go, yeah. What?
You wear makeup for a podcast.
For radio. Oh, yeah, it's a habit. I find them funnier with makeup on. It's like a performance. It's like, oh, I'm going to do a show. And I come out and there's nobody here, like always. But I sit down, you know, and I got my makeup on. I got a mirror. I look. Oh, yeah, look good, good. Got there. All right, move it. Mm-hmm. And then just before you called, when it was ringing, you didn't hear. I said, action. And now
and
when I hang up,
we were on.
I'll go, cut. It's over, and I'll crawl, and I'm going up into my bedroom and crawl under the covers.
Available on all streaming platforms, it's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here. Lots of new stuff happening here at WrestleCopia. If you haven't checked out our website at WrestleCopia.com, it's a great way to keep up with the latest episodes of all of your favorite Copia programming, from the Wrestling Memory Grenade to Regional Wrestling with the Territory Talk, the Wrestling Stoop with the legendary Bob Roop, And of course, all of those programs also available at your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the Copia world, all the latest news, random thoughts, fun videos, pictures, and more, make sure to join the more than 33,000 followers over at facebook.com/wrestlinggrenade. Don't be left out. And last, but definitely not least, it's what keeps the entire machine going. I'm talking about patreon.com/WrestleCopia. We appreciate your support in helping us pay the bills to keep the WrestleCopia Podcast Network running and enabling us to continue to bring you all the quality programming that we offer.
All right, and thank you to Mr. Dirk Benedict for coming on the show and talking about Body Slam. Guys, this movie is so much fun. Go see it. I think it's available out there. I actually think you can watch it on YouTube. But it might be in other areas too. I don't know. But go watch it. Go find it. Go watch it. It's just a fun, fun movie. Especially if you grew up a fan of wrestling in the 80s. It's just this cheesy slice of the times at that. So thank you, Dirk, for coming on doing that. I hope you guys enjoyed that interview because it was fun. Again, unique. One of a kind. I try to bring that to you. When I can, right? Something different, a little twist, maybe some first-time guests to the wrestling world. So hopefully you enjoyed it. Guys, follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much any platform. Just look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or at The Dave Dynasty, and you'll probably find me there. Also, be sure to subscribe to me on YouTube for lots of classic wrestling content, plus all of my various podcasts. Go check out all of the other WrestleCopia Network podcasts. You can find the individual podcasts on your favorite platform, or you can visit WrestleCopia.com. Like I said, make sure you check out the Wrestling Memory Grenade for that WrestleMania 5 Super Show that Ray Russell did, which I participate in for 2 matches. But there's lots of other great guest guys on there. It's a fun, fun show to listen to help remember WrestleMania 5. So go check that out. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Visit classicwrestling.net to sign up for your account and then go download the Ultimate Classic Wrestling app on all of your smart devices. That's a mouthful. So keep an eye on social media. I'll be announcing my next guest. I'm not sure what's going to happen yet. I'm going to take a week off my schedule's been crazy. I don't know what's going to happen just yet, but follow my social media. I will talk about it there. I will announce it there. But until then, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.